SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Kumi Taguchi and I host a TV show in Australia called Insight, which is unlike any other.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Every week in the same room, we have dozens of guests telling their stories about one shared issue.
There definitely was three people in my marriage.
I started an affair with this man.
From sex and relationships to health, wealth and grief.
Dad, there's been a shooting at the elementary school.
And there's always a guest whose story stays with me.
I actually had guilt for not killing someone.
And I'm left feeling there's so much more I want to ask them. I often wonder, where are they now? So that's what I do here. I go back and I dig a little deeper. This is Insightful. In this episode, I catch up with Samuel Hunter. When I first met Samuel, he spoke about his work as a male escort for his female clients.
How do you avoid getting too close to clients?
Boundaries and a therapist.
He was on an episode of Insight about midlife sexual awakenings with one of his clients who'd been living in a sexless marriage.
I wanted to make decisions for myself. I wanted to feel empowerment and take back that control. And the only way that I could do that was to reach out to a male escort.
That was a year ago, and I want to know so much more. I'm off to meet Samuel at his inner city apartment to have a look around. I'm looking forward to seeing inside Samuel's home because I know that he takes quite a few of his clients there.
Hi, hey. Samuel. Thank you so much for having me at your home. I come with coffee.
That makes up for the time of day.
Samuel's apartment is modern, minimal but stylish, and it feels comfortable to walk into. It has a view of the city and he grows lots of plants.
These are ones I grow because these are all edible flowers and I decorate my platters with those.
Most people I'll see for like 4 hours.
Yep.
And so the first half of that, I'll make them a cocktail and I've put out a platter and we'll probably have that at the bench.
Yeah, wow. Do you keep looking at your watch?
I have a timed playlist, so...
No way!
There's a song that I know each hour that comes on, like a different song per hour.
That is so smart. So at the top of each hour,
yeah,
a different song comes on and then you know you're an hour two or whatever.
Yep.
Samuel goes to a lot of effort to make his female clients feel really comfortable and relaxed in his home. So you can imagine I was curious to see where he does his work. His bedroom, or as he calls it, his workroom.
Look at me spying around.
Yeah, no,
this is why I became a journalist.
Expected.
I'm fascinated with what drew Samuel into sex work. He's a well-groomed man in his 40s. He has described himself as having a dad bod. He has a friendly, open face and a calm, unassuming demeanour. Basically not what you'd maybe expect for a male escort. So how did he end up doing what he does?
I was working in an adult shop and I saw that article about the woman taking NDIS to court about using her funding to access a sex worker. And it got me kind of wondering if I could do that, and then after the first COVID lockdown, I went for it.
The NDIS is Australia's National Disability Insurance Scheme, which provides funding to people with a disability. I wonder why this disability story struck such a chord with Samuel.
I'm a little bit disabled myself, post a pretty bad motorbike crash. For the first few years, I was definitely disabled. Like, I'd go through stages of being a wheelchair and using various mobility aids. But at the time, that didn't register with me. It was just I can understand that. I can see that there'd be a need for that. And I didn't, like, when I found all this out, I didn't jump straight into it. I was having a pretty horrible year in myself, it was nearly, I think, a year later till I felt better and was like, okay, well, maybe I can do this. When I first started in this and I would tell people what I was doing, especially like a guy, they'd be like, why would a woman pay for sex? They can just go to any pub and get sex for free. And I'd be like, yeah, but they're getting the sex that you're giving.
And when you told family, friends that this is the work that you're going to get into, what was their reaction like? Were there sort of cliched comments, I guess, from them as in, oh, great, you're going to have lots of sex?
So when I told, to start with, the people who, like, I knew since I was a teenager, they kind of were like, well, what took you so long? Like, this is not surprising in the slightest.
Why did they say that?
I don't know. I think I've been sexual to a degree my whole life, and not necessarily having lots of sex, but always talking and joking about sex and that sort of thing.
Can you remember your first job?
Yeah.
Was it scary?
It was actually like a last minute thing. So I didn't really get enough time to be overly nervous. And they asked for like a 3-hour booking, and I went to their hotel, and about 10 minutes into it, she was like, how much more if we make this an overnight? And I was like, yeah, sweet. And then when I left there in the morning, I had a inquiry for somebody else wanting to see me that Saturday night. And
oh,
I was like,
goodness.
In that night, and I was like, oh, how about next weekend? They're like, because I couldn't get there till really late. And they're like, no, late's fine. And so I was like, okay, let's push through and see if I can do this. So I had that overnight. It was a heat wave in Sydney, and we're just like sweating bullets immediately. Leave there, get home, shower, change, go to the next place.
Wow.
But I got home that night after those three bookings in like 24 hours, and I was kind of looking at the cash, and I was like, oh my God, it would have taken me more than a month in my last job to make this.
Wow. You must have been physically done.
I slept for 18 hours.
Yeah, you would.
The average age of the clients I see, it's kind of started skewing upwards a bit more recently. It's more around 50, I'd say. The oldest client I've seen was 70. I guess a lot of it is maybe they've been neglected sexually in their marriage, and sometimes that's for 20 years. I met a client recently, he was nearly 50, who had never had somebody go down on them, for example. And then I guess the other big part of why women will see me is that I provide a safe space, which allows them to explore things that maybe they haven't before. But I'm also genuine, like I'm not overly different than who I am in my personal life. I'm a good listener. I like to be present when I'm with anybody, pay attention to what they're saying, pay attention to their needs. And I guess that's something that a lot of people haven't necessarily had before in their life.
When Samuel appeared on Insight with his client Rachel, she told us why she made the decision to pay for sex.
So meeting Samuel for the first time was quite interesting, to say the least. But one of the reasons why I reached out to Samuel was I was absolutely at a crossroads in my life where I had turned 40 during the COVID lockdown. I'd been married to a man who didn't find me sexually attractive. And so over time that erodes away your sense of identity in terms of being a woman, but also feeling desired. And so I found a adult directory and I started looking at particular men who potentially I could hire just as a companion. So at first it wasn't all about the sexual intimacy that I was seeking. It was just being able to provide myself time to experience something more than just what I was presently living.
Rachel explained how she went through the entire online list of male escorts, filtering out most of them, and she was very specific in her search. She wanted someone similar in age who felt welcoming, non-threatening. She liked Samuel's photos and felt he was her type of human, so she decided to reach out to him.
She was after like a 4-hour dinner and play date, which is usually the first time kind of meet up. She was a lot of fun to chat to on email, so we actually kept chatting for the month before our date. And by the time we actually had the date, she'd extended the 4 hours to an overnight, and then from an overnight to the entire weekend.
ordinarily I'd be quite nervous if I've not met somebody in person to have a whole weekend, but I could tell from our banter on email, and then a few days before our booking she called me up, and so I was like, yeah, this will be fun, this will be a fun weekend.
So the first time I met Samuel, we decided to meet on a Friday afternoon. He walked up to the bar and he tapped me on the shoulder, and I turned around and it was just like old friends meeting. That was the sense that I got. Immediately I just felt comfortable, and I just gave him a little kiss, and I just gave him the biggest cuddle, and off we went.
Rachel and Samuel's story is fascinating because it's pretty rare to hear such a frank account of a married woman seeking out a male escort. Rachel said that once she found Samuel, she had regular weekly bookings with him for a year.
The good part about having regular clients is you've had this relationship with somebody for a year or two, and you learn about each other on a personal level. You know, you each ask about how your lives are going, you know, they know about what's happening in my life outside of work, but then the intimacy changes as well, and that's good.
So some of the things that Samuel has introduced me to has definitely opened and broadened up my my horizons, and they are all amazing. Going to a sex club, very fascinating. I wouldn't recommend it to everybody, because it takes a certain mindset to get there. Being with a woman for the first time, and that was definitely an interesting experience, and I can say that it was one that was extremely enjoyable, and I would love to do that again, given the opportunity. And then also having a threesome and a foursome, all these amazing things. And I understand that there's going to be a lot of people out there thinking that these aren't things that I would ever do, and I was of the same mindset for so long. But to be able to feel safe, and I think that's the most important thing, feeling safe draws out so many different inhibitions, and my mindset in terms of how I approach sexual intimacy these days completely changed to who I was when I had just turned 40.
Samuel and Rachel seem to share pretty good chemistry, but it did make me wonder whether a male escort can fake that kind of sexual attraction with a client if he's just not feeling it.
I find it's about just, you've got to be present and mindful the whole time. I guess the kind of headspace to get into is, I don't want to be anywhere else in the world right now than with this person, and kind of just feel all of those touches, be into that kiss as if it was the love of your life, kind of that intensity. Because people have asked then, like, oh, you know, do you think about so and so, you know, when you sleep with a client? And I'm like, no, that's the worst thing I can do. I have to be there in the room. Like, if my brain starts going off like that, I'll lose my erection. And
And look, I don't always finish when I'm working, and that's fine. But yeah, like, I do definitely have clients who are, they feel like I need to be satisfied with that particular climax. And I'm like, no, I enjoy everything. I enjoy the intimacy. I enjoy the kissing and the kind of those sort of moments.
How do you stop clients from getting attached to you?
From like stories I've had with, say, female peers who see men, it sounds like men are the more emotionally unstable ones that get obsessed with their worker, which I know sounds like the opposite to most people.
Yeah.
What most people will expect. I find that my clients really understand the boundary that we have, and that in that time we have together, I'm all about them. Yeah, you also have to respect your own boundaries there, though. Like, I can't be someone who just gets trauma dumped on. I can't hear about these seriously heartbreaking stories and then go, okay, well, let's get naked and let me be all excited and aroused, when I'm like, I want to cry. This was really depressing and sad. Like,
do you ever say that to clients? Like, actually, this is a bit too much to share?
Yeah. One client in particular comes to mind who I was like, we have a whole weekend, and the last few times it's been like progressively getting darker, and I'm like, your life is hard. The things that you're going through in your life, this is meant to be the kind of cheer up, and you're kind of trauma dumping, and one, I'm not qualified, but two, it, yes, life sucks, but get a therapist for that.
So what happens if a client crosses the line? If they overshare, or if Samuel doesn't want to keep seeing them? Have you ever had to sort of break it off with a client?
So the industry term is fired. You kind of just tell them that you're not going to see them again, not to contact you, etc. And then you can, depending on the situation, you can block them completely. Learning those boundaries was something that my therapist helped with. I see a sex therapist, and mostly just so I can feel comfortable talking about the things that can happen at work and not be judged.
What do you think are the clichés that people think about the work that you do?
Probably the main one that all clients of sex workers is that they have to pay for sex. That's the main one that people think.
Oh, so they've got no other options?
Yeah,
so
like, they've got to pay for sex. Oh, yeah, they're definitely paying for sex. I can see why. And that's not the case at all. Like, I've definitely met clients who I'm like, you wouldn't even talk to me in the real world. Like, how are you here? How am I getting paid for this? What is my life? I'm so confused right now. And that can be in all sorts of reasons. Like, it's kind of fun in seeing such a broad spectrum of people and their backgrounds and their occupations and their lives, and those who have got kids and families and those who have never had any children. There's a lot of difference there.
With your work, does it make you sort of not want to have a relationship of your own?
A month ago, I would have flatly said, no, definitely don't. I still don't want a relationship, but I'm allowing myself to be open to the idea of something. And I think my biggest concern, because I've met some people over the last few years in my private life that have made me think about it, but then I have found that it's distracting from being that mindful self in work. And yeah, so that would be my biggest concern.
Would you be concerned about how they might feel about your work?
It would have to be somebody in the industry, because yeah. You just can't, I don't think you can fully grasp it unless you are in the industry or have been in it previously.
I'm keen to hear more about Samuel's sliding door moment, the event which changed his life's direction and led to the now 45-year-old becoming a male escort. You've mentioned your motorbike accident.
I had a compound tibia fracture, which is where the bone pops out.
Oh, and so is that like metal in there now?
Yeah, and fractured my jaw in two places. Don't wear open-faced helmets on a motorbike. Just putting that out there.
How long generally do people work in an industry like yours? Do you see a time limit?
It depends for everybody and what they want out of doing the work. If it's meant to be a kind of a career path, or if it's a job that they can balance while studying, for example. I'll probably go till I'm 50. I don't know. When people stop going, no, you're too old, I'm not going to pay for that.
Have you ever wondered what your life would be had you not gone down the path you've gone down?
That's the kind of the sliding doors moment that I think about my bike crash. Like, if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. When I word this now, it sounds a bit hilarious, but when I got signed off with the work cover stuff, and they're like, because I was coming home from work, the final doctor to go, you know, you're going to get a payout, it's not life changing, but your time working on your feet is limited. Now, I didn't immediately go, well, I'll lie down for work.
You took it very literally.
Yeah, no, well, so I kind of like was looking for writing jobs on like Gumtree, because I don't have a degree. I found a job writing for a brothel, like writing blogs for them, and then writing erotic short stories, which then got me into the work in the sex shop, and then...
It's like all meant to be when you look back.
Yeah, and so I kind of, like, I try not to have any regrets about anything, because even if it's a regret now, you know, in 5-10 years' time, it may not be. You may go, oh, you know, like 8 years ago, that bike crash was the absolute worst thing that ever happened to me. And now, I wouldn't be where I am if that hadn't happened. So I try not to look at that sliding door thing, because it's kind of a waste of energy, really, at the end of the day.
Samuel, it's been so great seeing you again, chatting to you again. Thank you so much for all your time.
Thanks.
I know you're off
back
on a plane this afternoon.
Yes.
Squeezed us in before appointments and travel, so thank you
well,
so much.
Well, on the bright side, I did have to get up early for this, so I'm hoping to catch up on sleep on the plane. So
have a great flight. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Insightful, an 8-part series from SBS, recorded in Sydney, Australia, on the land of the Gadigal people. Insightful is produced by Felicity Davey, Cassandra Allen and Kate Harassi, and edited by Maddox Foster. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay tuned for more. Until next time, I'm Kumi Taguchi. Thanks so much for your company.